Good morning, everybody. My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm one of the co-chairs of the CCWG Accountability. And I'd like to welcome all of you, either in the room or remotely, to this joint CWG-CCWG town hall meeting. As Fadi Shahadi mentioned in his speech a few minutes earlier, he requested us all to focus on the first phase of the transition exercise, and I think this is the first example during the day where we can evidence that. I would like to introduce my fellow panelists to you. So on the right of the table, it's Lisa Fuhr, Jonathan Robinson. Lisa and Jonathan are the CWG co-chairs that have just submitted their proposal to the chartering organizations, and we expect that the proposal they submitted will be approved by the chartering organization. Next to me is Mathieu Weil, and to my left, it's Leon Sanchez, and we are the co-chairs of the CCWG, and the CCWG is still working on its proposal, and we're going to show you through where we are in a moment. So as you will have seen on the slides, now the burden is on the CCWG to deliver, so pressure is on, but don't cry for us, Argentina. So with that, I'd like to hand over to Jonathan Robinson, who would like to bring you up to speed on the status of the work of the CWG.
Thank you very much, Thomas, and good morning, everyone. Before we begin with the detail on the work of the CWG, I'm going to just make a few general opening remarks. Clearly, you've got in front of you here two cross-community working groups, each of which has their own set of objectives, and their work is rooted in two specific charters in each case. Each charter was approved by the chartering organizations, the respective supporting organizations and advisory committees that commissioned this work. So as the NTIA withdraws from its historic stewardship role, accountability is clearly and arguably the overarching theme across the two different groups, for both the CWG on the stewardship group and the accountability group. Since the IANA functions are performed within ICANN, these accountability areas are very strongly linked, and the co-chairs respectively on this table have had to work together over many months to ensure that this linkage is not only intact, but remains coherent and the appropriate interdependence takes place with a lack of duplication. So we've met together regularly and frequently in order to produce this coordinated approach between the two groups. And we've also benefited from many members and participants in common and liaisons between the two groups. As you have heard, the CWG has now submitted its final proposal to the chartering organizations, and we await their approval, hopefully, later this week. Of course, the CCWG, the work on the accountability, is still very much work in progress. And here's the critical point. The work of the group that Lisa and I chaired on the stewardship is expressly conditioned on the work of the accountability group. In other words, whilst we can progress with the integration of the NAMES proposal on stewardship together with the other groups, the work cannot be seen as complete in the whole, in the round, until it is joined together in the final event with its related work from the accountability group. So we expect that when the final proposal from the accountability group is delivered to the chartering organizations for their approval, a key check that those chartering organizations will want to make for themselves before approving that work is that the conditionality implicit in the work of the stewardship group has been met. So I think with that background, I hope you can, it's a quick sketch and an understanding of the interlinking between these. By participating in this session, and we hope you will participate, rather than simply hear from us, you should end up with a very good understanding of the proposal on the stewardship transition. You should end up with both a good understanding of the proposal on the accountability and a very current update from their recent work, including the sessions that took place at the tail end of last week. And so the majority of this session will focus on, in first part, an understanding of the stewardship proposal, and then in second part, to focus in on the accountability work. And through that, we hope you will end up with a confidence in the proposals and that the community will retain and, in fact, develop significant influence through the work of the accountability group. And the conditionality implicit and contained within that will empower the community to vote, we hope, on the stewardship proposal, knowing that this linkage is tightly bound in, and therefore that you can with confidence vote on the stewardship or take your decisions. I think vote is not necessarily appropriate across all the SOs and ACs, but take your decisions on the proposals safe in the knowledge that the conditionality and the linkage is built in and won't be lost by dealing with the stewardship proposal at this meeting. Thank you. So, with that, I'll hand over then to Lisa to deal with the first part of the work from the stewardship.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see so many of you here interested in the work. We'll do a quick walk through our slides and the model as such. And the first one is about statistics and diversity. And this is actually a very important slide for us because this slide shows the huge amount of effort that's been put into this proposal, but also, as important, the diversity of the group. And this has been very important for us all along to have representatives from all over the world. And as you see, we have had from all of the chartering organizations, they've been all along with us in this work. And we also have had people that has no affiliation to ICANN. We've had 53, and that's that's very good because that shows the outreach that's beyond the ICANN world. But you can also see we've been 152 members of the working group, and 152 members and participants, and everyone has been participating on equal terms. So we've had a very good working group with 101 calls, almost 5,000 volunteer working hours, and a lot of email exchange. Well, our proposal is not the only one. It's part of a larger process. One of the processes is, of course, the accountability process where we are dependent on their work. But furthermore, our proposal is an answer to a request for a proposal made from the ICG. So we are the CWG Stewardship Transition Group, where we also have the CRISP, the numbering communities, and the IANA plan, that's a protocol, that are giving in their proposals to the ICG that has to compile it all into one final proposal. And the numbering and the protocol community submitted their proposals in January, where we, the CWG stewardship, had to work a little more on our proposal so we could submit it for a little while ago. This is important to understand because this makes time of essence. We have to have another round of public comment with the ICG, and also there will be another round with the CWG proposal with public comments. So this is all going to link into a final proposal to the NTIA. Why is the accountability important to the CWG, the stewardship transition? That's because ICANN is both the domain name policy body and the current IANA functions operator. So this makes this linkage very important. What are the goals and requirements of our proposal? Well, first and foremost, it's meeting the needs of the direct customers. And to do that, we have to produce a consolidated transition proposal for the elements of the IANA functions related to the domain name system. And what would a proposal require in order to meet those needs? Well, we thought it should have a contract that could replace the current contract with the NTIA. There was also a need for accountability mechanisms on IANA with respect to the on ICANN with respect to the IANA functions. There was also a need for a further separation between the policy and operation for the IANA functions operator. And we needed a replacement for the NTIA role in the root zone. We needed to find a way to ensure adequate funding of the IANA functions. And as you see as the last one, an ability for the multi-stakeholder community to require the selection of a new operator for the IANA functions if necessary. That's what's been called separability, separation possibility. We have actually had two public comment periods. The first one was in December, where we sent out a proposal and got a lot of feedback, and we had to change the model from that feedback. But some of the important parts of that feedback was the premise that there was great satisfaction with the current IANA functions operator, and ICANN should remain the IANA functions operator furthermore. And there was also comments stating that we needed independent legal advice. So we have, Sidley Austin has helped us all through this process, and those are also the legal advisors for the accountability team. This has ensured really good coordination between the groups. Well, the second public comment period that was in April helped us refine the details of the proposed model we had. We have, after this public comment period, we have refined the role and composition of the PTI board. We have refined the approval mechanisms for the root zone environment, and also the escalation mechanisms in relation to the separation process. So those two public comment periods was open to everyone. Everyone could submit their comments, and we had a lot of good and constructive feedback. And that's what brought us to where we are today, where we have a model that we have actually sent to the chartering organizations. And I will now hand over to my co-chair, Jonathan, who will walk you through the actual model. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. So this slide attempts to capture a significant amount of that work, or at least the outcome of that work, in a structural overview of the post-transition IANA. Before doing that, before looking at that post-transition structure on the left, it's worth comparing it with the grayed out area of the pre-transition setup. So on the left-hand side of the slide, in the grayed out area, you have the oversight of the NTIA. You have ICANN with the IANA functions operator as a functionally separate unit, but managed within the broader ICANN operations under contract with the NTIA. So you've got you've got the current governance and set up in a symbolic representation there, which encapsulates the current stewardship model. What changes as we move over towards the right in color in the post-transition world? Well, as you see there, there are some similarities, but also some critical differences. We have a post-transition entity which is now not only functionally separate, in other words, the staff are, the functional separation describes the operating entity being separately located and independently operated within the overall structure of ICANN. But here we put a further wrapper around that in the form of a legal separation, the creation of what many of us would view as a subsidiary. Technically, this subsidiary is more correctly referred to as an affiliate. That is the legal definition of it, but it's useful to view that as a subsidiary, a separate legal entity, which has a form of enhanced separation by virtue of this legal separation. The rationale for the legal separation is that it does exactly that. It enhances the structural separation and assists in the distinction between the policy and operational aspects of the management of the service. Moreover, it provides an entity with which ICANN can contract. Without a legally separate entity or something equivalent, it makes it very difficult to encapsulate the relationship in a contract as it currently is. And so this provides for the capability for ICANN to contract with the separate subsidiary and to encapsulate that relationship, including items such as the service level agreement with the separate legal entity. Ultimately, in the event of the unlikely eventuality, but ultimately we had to consider all sorts of eventualities, in the unlikely eventuality of a bankruptcy, there is a greater, of the parent company, there is a greater protection by virtue of the legally separate entity. And in an equally, or perhaps even, well, it's certainly in a scenario that many would consider to be at least at the end of a long chain of escalations and remedies, there is the possibility of actual separation of the legally distinct entity. I think it's probably useful, this slide highlights the other key components of accountability, oversight, and escalation in the form of the CSC and the IFR, and then ultimately in the orange, lightly shaded area, the accountability mechanisms provided by the interrelationship work with the accountability group. We'll come on to that interdependence much later in the session, but over the next few slides, I'll walk you through a little more detail on the post-transition IANA entity, the composition of the board associated with that, because by virtue of being a separate subsidiary, there is a separate legal entity, there is the opportunity and the necessity to have a board, and to deal with the CSC, the Customer Standing Committee, and the IANA Function Review. So here we look in a little more detail at the post-transition IANA entity, the separate legal subsidiary.
And this is really designed to, this creates the opportunity for the separate entity, as I said, with its own unique board, but remains within the overall governance and supervision of ICANN. So we keep IANA within, we keep the post-transition IANA within ICANN based on the understanding that there is a current satisfaction with the performance of the current operator. And in order to keep that entity tightly bound into ICANN, and for us, the users of that service, to be able to hold post-transition IANA, hold ICANN fully accountable for the operational performance of the post-transition entity, we have a board that is majority appointed by ICANN. Now, at first sight, this is something which might cause some people to be concerned, and it was a subject of quite a lot of discussion within the group, the working group, as we dealt with this. Because the natural instinct is to say, to seek independent, some form of independent oversight of that post-transition entity. We took legal advice, and in combination with our own careful thinking and analysis of this, and the legal advice we took, we came to the conclusion and understanding that this was not the place to create all of and the significant independent oversight of this entity. There's a very good reason for that. The post-transition IANA entity is bound into ICANN by virtue of ICANN's membership of the company and by virtue of the appointment of the board. If the board is appointed independently of ICANN, ICANN ceases to control that post-transition entity in a legal sense at the very least, and in so doing cannot be held fully accountable for its performance, which is what we need to be able to do. In the event that the performance is not satisfactory or adequate, there are numerous escalation mechanisms to address that, and I'll touch on some of those as we go through this. But in the top right, you see the working group's recommendation for the composition of the PTI board. We have suggested that the most senior manager responsible for the operations of that entity is on the board. Given that it's a technical function, that the ICANN CTO is on the board, and given that this is a functionally and legally distinct entity, but nevertheless a subsidiary of the parent, that the executive within the parent, within ICANN, responsible for the operation of this entity, is also on the board. So we have three ICANN appointees to the board. And in so doing, the majority of the board is controlled by the parent. And in so doing, and therefore, the subsidiary is tightly bound into the parent, and we can rely on the accountability mechanisms that will be provided by the work of this group to hold ICANN accountable for the performance of its subsidiary to the extent that the subsidiary remains a subsidiary of ICANN. We have created the opportunity for the appointment of two independent directors to create a degree of independent oversight, which we think is a valuable additional corporate governance mechanism, and our requirement is that those independent directors are appointed by a mechanism such as the ICANN nominating committee or some similarly robust mechanism for producing carefully selected independent directors who have the right skill set to contribute to the independent oversight of that post-transition entity. The customers of this predominantly technical function will interact with it on a day-to-day basis, as you would expect any customers to do. These customers are, for the purposes of this presentation, the names registries. However, in order to give those customers some form of organized representation and oversight of the post-transition IANA entity, this working group has recommended the construction of a customer standing committee, a group of registry customers that have the ability to meet on a regular basis and provide oversight of the operation of that entity, essentially monitoring day-to-day performance and to replace some of the operational responsibilities or replace the operational responsibilities previously provided by the U.S. government. The focus of this entity is on the direct customers of the service, hence the name, the Customer Standing Committee. There is an opportunity, although not a necessary condition, for liaisons from the SOs and ACs to participate in that Customer Standing Committee. It may be that those SOs and ACs have little or no interest in this entity, providing it is performing its customer operations on a day-to-day basis, which is why we made the liaison the liaisons optional. And you see there that that covered both the composition in some detail as well as the reference to the liaisons. As we move through the PTI, the CSC, and then we come on to the IANA functions review. Now, here we recognize a number of critical points. In particular, that there will be a requirement to periodically review at a distance and with some substantial independence and multi-stakeholder input the performance of the post-transition structure and setup. It is planned that these reviews will take place on a five-yearly basis, everything being as expected. In addition, we have created a proposal which envisages the first of such reviews taking place after 2 years, in order that there's not too substantial an elapsed time post-transition, and we felt there was a balance to be struck here. We didn't want the post-transition entity to be entering into a review immediately, but nor waiting too long before there was some substantial oversight. And you see before you on the slide there the composition of that IANA review function, including familiar components from various elements of the ICANN community, and I'm not sure it's worth reading all of those out to you, but you can get a feel for the diverse and multi-stakeholder components of that IANA function review. You see at the bottom of that highlighted square or lozenge on the screen there, reference to a special IFR. This really says a couple of things to you. One, that although this is a structured and periodic review function, there is the possibility of introducing reviews out of cycle. And the way in which that will work is, in the event that there is a perceived or actual substantial issue with the performance that hasn't been of the post-transition IANA entity, that hasn't been resolved through direct interaction with customers, that hasn't been resolved via the CSC, and a series of escalation procedures, which I'd like to draw your attention to in the report, if you have an interest in that. There's a structured and systematic piece of work that's dealt with the range of escalation options that exist. If those essentially fail to remedy sustained performance issues, there is the opportunity to institute a special and out-of-sequence IANA function review. The reviews in either case, whether periodic and regular or special, are not constrained in what they can look at or what they can recommend. So they have a wide-ranging potential scope in the oversight of the post-transition entity. And I think that's a crucial point to make. They are not restricted in what they can look at nor what they can recommend. One potential recommendation that could come out of a review function is to recommend work on separation. But that would not mean that such a recommendation or work on separation would result in a separation. What that would do is, if that recommendation was made, it would then kick off the commissioning of a cross-community working group analogous to the work that's just been done over the last 6 months or so, to which we've called a separation cross-community working group. So what you see in here is a series of oversight and escalation mechanisms with a series of careful checks and balances along the way that we believe will satisfactorily and comprehensively replace the existing stewardship function with a well-thought-out and ultimately multi-stakeholder-based solution. We very much hope you'll agree. There are details to be worked out during the implementation process, but we believe that this proposal as it stands is a satisfactory and comprehensive response to the RFP from the ICG. So thank you for paying attention to that. We will come back to this in a little more detail when we come to the final session of this morning's work, when we talk about in some detail and re-emphasize the linkage between the stewardship work and the accountability work. So thank you again, and over to my co-chairs from the accountability group.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. And we will now excuse Lisa and Jonathan and give them a few minutes rest before you join us back later in this session. As we move to the description of the initial proposals from the cross-community working group on enhancing ICANN's accountability. And for that purpose, we will be joined by the three rapporteurs of the cross-community working group on ICANN's accountability, namely Becky Burr, who is leading the part of our work on reviews and redress, Jordan Carter, who is leading the group on the community mechanisms, and Steve Del Bianco. And as they move on, so the point here now is going to be focusing on this initial proposal, starting with an introduction that will be provided by Thomas Rickert. And hopefully we'll pass this quite swiftly so we can have a longer question and answer session after that. So, Thomas, over to you.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. Just to refresh everyone's memories, the CCWG accountability has been tasked with improving ICANN's overall accountability. So we're not only looking at aspects of accountability related to the IANA stewardship transition. In fact, that part of accountability is explicitly in the CWG's charter, but we're looking at the overall accountability architecture of ICANN. And our work is split into two work streams, the first of which focuses on those accountability mechanisms that need to be either implemented or committed to prior to the transition. And this is what Fadi has referred to as phase one. This is what we're focusing on now. This is what we're trying to complete by Dublin for the chartering organizations to review and approve. So you might miss a few points that are important to you personally in this very first phase, but rest assured there's another phase which we call Workstream 1, and that includes those accountability measures or such accountability work that we are planning and foreseeing now, but that will not be completed prior to the transition. So that will be the more long-term or mid-term accountability work that we're conducting. But we've already included a list of areas of work for Workstream 1 in our report so that everybody knows that this is not just a vague intention to further work on ICANN's accountability, but that there is actually a robust plan in place so so that nothing gets forgotten once the stewardship transition is over. The CCWG has roughly 150 individuals working on it, consisting of 26 members from the chartering organizations and 120 participants. On the slide, you can see the participants by region, and certainly there's room for improvement to be more inclusive at the global level. So those who wish to join this effort, you can still do so. There's a lot more work to be done. Please join the group and help us achieving this important task. There's also some statistical information on the number of calls, volunteer hours, and emails exchanged, and actually I haven't compared that to the CWG figures, but I'm confident that we'll beat them in that area. Now, what we've presented in our report, and this is very important, is not something that has our group's consensus. So these proposals that we have published for you to comment on are nothing that is provisionally or finally carved in stone. Our group is conducting two public comment periods, and we thought it would be very helpful for us to have one of these public comment periods even before we draw our conclusions and do a consensus call, because we want to learn from you, from the community, whether we are moving in the right direction and do course correction if need be. And actually there were some, and we're going to speak to that as we move on in the session. So nothing is actually perpetuated in any way. It's all provisional work results. Actually, we made it explicitly clear that our group has debates, that our group is struggling in some areas to find the right solution, and that our group has actually put different options for various questions in front of the community to chime in. But what seems to be common sense in our group from a very early start is that we think we can build all accountability mechanisms, the whole accountability architecture, infrastructure, from four building blocks. And we tried to be as lightweight as we could by not inventing too much new things, but actually to build on what we already found in ICANN. So we, at the outset of our work, we actually established an inventory of ICANN's existing accountability mechanisms, and we looked at those that were good, and we analyzed where there's room for improvement. Also, we listened to the community. You will recall that last year ICANN has conducted a public comment period already where the community has voiced concerns, where the community has made suggestions. We've analyzed all that. So what you find in our findings is actually not only what the individuals in our group came up with, but that's already based and rooted in community feedback. So we think that we can basically replicate something which has proven to be efficient over centuries. So we're building ICANN as a mini-state, if you wish. So we're going to use this analogy for a moment, but since no analogy is perfect, we're going to move away from it very shortly. But basically, we have the legislative, the people, which would be an empowered community. We think that in the absence of the historic relationship with the U.S. government, where the U.S. government sort of had some power over ICANN, and if that power goes away, we would rather give it to the community so that it's truly bottom-up. And I'll explain what this empowered community means in a moment. We would have an executive, which would be the ICANN board. We would have a constitution, which would be an augmented and amended ICANN bylaws. And we would have a judiciary, which would be the independent review mechanisms that we're working on. Okay, so on this slide you find these four building blocks again. And what we're planning to do is this. We are thinking of having something which we earlier called a community council, where the SOs and ACs have representation, and where all of them except for ESSEC and RSEC would have five votes, and ESSEC and RSEC would have two votes. And that group would come together and make some decisions to exercise community powers. And these community powers would be the possibility to review ICANN's budget, its strategic plan and operating plan, and also to chime in on bylaw changes. It would also have the opportunity to remove individual directors or to recall the entire board. So how would we operationalize that? We would put that into the bylaws, and in order to make the bylaws robust, because there are some in the community who say, okay, now you guys should be cautious because we might change the bylaws now to have all these new accountability features, but once the U.S. government has moved away, who guarantees that these improvements are not going to be reversed and we're back to square one? Which is why we thought that certain aspects of ICANN's accountability need to be made more robust than other aspects of ICANN's accountability. And that's where we came up with the idea with so-called fundamental bylaws, and that would be the mission commitments and core values. You know, that's going to be new language, amended language in the bylaws. That would be the independent review process, so that nobody can jump to the conclusion that, you know, we don't need this judiciary in the new system, so let's get rid of it and strike it out. It would be the power to veto non-fundamental bylaws. And in order not to be disruptive to ICANN's operations, we would say that normal bylaw changes can be done by the board as the board does it now. They would go through a consultation process with the community, and then the board would take a decision on the bylaw change. And only if something goes wrong in that, if the community feels, well, this bylaw change is actually not what we authorized the board to do, then the community can veto such bylaw changes of normal bylaws after the fact. For fundamental bylaws, it would be different. There, the community would need to explicitly approve bylaw changes. Then it would be some reviews, such as the reviews asked for by the CWG. Those would also be made fundamental bylaws, and the community powers that I've just described. And that all is to ensure that we maintain flexibility, so these fundamental bylaws are more robust and harder to change. They need a higher voting threshold. Yet, we are cognizant of the fact that ICANN is working in a rapidly changing environment, and even things such as ICANN's remit and mandate might need to be reframed in a couple of years down the line, and we can make that happen with this architecture. And then we would have the independent appeals mechanism, and we've analyzed what the IRP does today. We've analyzed where there are inefficiencies, where it is inefficient or where it is even deficient, and we try to improve that by adding certain features to it. So we want that the IRP decisions, or our current thinking is that the IRP decisions should be binding for the board. We think that it's a good idea to have the independent review panel not only look at procedural aspects, but also look at the substance of cases, to decide on the merits of the case. We've been discussing one case frequently where the IRP said, well, the decision was wrong, but procedurally everything was right, and therefore they didn't have any further means to go against the decision and help the aggrieved party. So that's what we're going to change. We're looking at aspects of accessibility, low cost, relatively low cost, and we're looking to have a standing panel of independent experts, out of which one or three, depending on the case, would be chosen to decide on cases. Now, all these community powers that I've alluded to earlier would follow the same scheme of decision-making. So either one SO or AC or multiple of them, so for example, for recalling the whole board, it wouldn't be only just one group that could start this process, but we would need multiple of them. They would file a petition. Then it would be checked by this community group whether the petition meets the required threshold. Then, if so, if the requirements are met, then votes would be taken. And depending on the subject matter concerned, these would either be votes mandated by the SO or AC, or the representatives could have flexibility, so that depends on the case. But then if a certain voting threshold is met, there would be a decision, and that would need to be implemented. And according to our current thinking, and I mentioned that earlier, we would have 29 votes in total, but for many cases we would not be prescriptive on how these votes would be managed by the various SOs and ACs. I think I should pause here. So what we did as a vehicle to make this happen, we thought of a structure which we called the reference model, although we kept the door open for other models as well. And this reference model was such where the SOs and ACs would create additional legal entities, and the recommendation was that we would be using unincorporated associations, which is a lightweight legal structure. It's lightweight to our perception, but not everybody agrees that it is lightweight, and we'll get back to that in a moment. But the SOs and ACs would have these additional legal entities as alter egos or as avatars merely for the purpose of exercising certain community powers. So that was the idea, that was our proposal, that was the reference model, and we will now take a look at how the community responded to our draft report or to our first report. So, Leon, would you like to... Or shall I just continue to...
You were supposed to do the consensus one?
Yep. Okay, so we have tried to categorize the various areas of our report in three sections. We are on our journey to consensus, and we try to slice and dice the feedback that we get. So we try to identify those areas where the community strongly supported what we're doing. We try to identify areas where further explanation or clarification is needed. And then we have another section or another area where more deliberation of the groups is needed. And I will briefly confirm to you that the vast majority of commenters has applauded us for the four building block structure. So they said, that's a good idea. That's the way you should be going. They also said that what we're suggesting is significantly enhancing ICANN's accountability. Right? So I guess that's very good news. That's very good news. We have a limited set of powers. You know, it took me only a few minutes to explain them to you. And the community said, yes, the requirements that need to be in place for an enhanced accountability are okay. That's what you should be doing. Also, the principle of fundamental bylaws remained more or less undisputed by the commenters. Also, working more on ICANN's purpose and mission was something that the community was very happy with. And the incorporation of AOC reviews into the bylaws, or at least parts of that, was something, incorporating those was something that the community liked. Because we said, what's going to happen once the AOC is terminated at some future point? Will all these reviews go away? And we said, no, they're not going to go away. We perpetuate them in the bylaws. So I guess that's good news. We, you know, for our general approach, we got a lot of positive feedback. So that's something, certainly we need to work on details. And sub-teams have taken good note of the areas where further work needs to be done, but that's more or less uncontentious. And before I hand over to my colleague Leon, I'd just like to note that all the comments we received have been and further will be analyzed very diligently. We're using the so-called public comment review tool, where all the incoming reports, comments have been sliced to the respective areas of the report so that we would have all the community feedback on a specific question in one place. And then for all comments, for all sections, our group has been working on and will further refine responses that could either be, well, that's a good point, but we've already taken a look at that, so at the moment there is no further action required, or this is actually an excellent idea. We will revisit what we've done so far and take that to heart and further elaborate and maybe come up with a different solution. So I think I should pause here and hand over to you, Leon.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Leon Sanchez. For those who are attending on the remote participation mode and our remote hubs that are connecting to the LAB Connect room. As Thomas just said, there was a lot of support for the overall proposal that we have built. But of course, we have also recommendations that require further explanation and clarification. One of these proposals is the IRP. On an overall perspective, we could say that the IRP, as we are designing it and proposing it, has an overall support from the community. But as I said, it requires some clarification in different areas. Like, for example, we are talking about a reconsideration request process that needs to be further clarified. There have been some concerns and some questions raised with regards to this reconsideration request process. There has also been some comments about the ombudsman role. Like, for example, we have commenters suggesting that the ombudsman should undertake a preliminary review on RR petitions as opposed to ICANN legal staff. So we think that this is, of course, very valuable feedback that we will be taking into account to build our next version of the document and the proposal for the second public comment period. We also have been asked to do refinement about the composition of the board reviewers and conflict of interest check. For example, not having board members reviewing their own decisions. I think that this is a key issue that must be addressed and has, of course, been raised by the community. So we also have some changes in review standards, like, for example, materially affected versus materially harmed. This new IRP would be open for anyone that has been materially affected or materially harmed. This is the discussion we're having at this point, and of course it would need to be clarified. Also, we have had comments on standing, on deadlines and timelines. Some of the deadlines and timelines have been perceived as being too short, or maybe others too long, and there also have been some requests on, for example, extending the timelines and deadlines under extraordinary conditions, and this is, of course, important. And we have also received some comments on transparency and other topics like financial arrangements, community empowerment, and prevention of the use of this IRP for frivolous or vexatious means. So this is, of course, as I said, a work in progress, and as Thomas stated, this is not final, this is not carved in stone, and we will continue to work to incorporate the different comments that we have received so far by the community into the next version of the proposal. And as well as these clarifications and these explanations on these topics, there have also been new issues arising, and I believe that Matthew, you have a summary of those, right?
Thank you, Leon. Indeed, this section is actually the most interesting for us as a group, because when you get into a public comment period, and we were very, very much pushing for a quick initial public comment, even if it was not based on a consensus proposal, because we knew that the community would bring to our attention some aspects that we, even as a very large group as we are, were not realizing were important. And that's what happened. So the key issues that were brought to our attention were, number one, the issue of ICANN's overall culture of accountability. And behind this are concerns related to how accountability trickles down from the board to all layers of the organization. And that was an issue that was laid out as a concern by several of the commenters. So one, and we hadn't really taken a lot of time on this, so this is an issue where we will be considering how to best address it within the scope of our charter, obviously. Number two was a topic which was laid out very nicely by many under the label, who watches the watchers? The model we're providing is a model of mutual accountability. We are separating powers so that there is a balance between the powers of the board, the powers of the independent review process and the powers of the community. And several commenters said, but who's really holding the community accountable? And by the community, they say the ASOs and ACs, because those are the organizations that we, our proposal suggests to empower over a certain limited number of decisions made by the board. And I think this is a very important aspect that we will have to deal with within our group, and once again, within the limited boundaries of our charter, because it's definitely not our intention or even in our possibilities to go into a major reshuffle of this. But however, we need to make sure there are no unintended consequences in empowering the ASOs and ACs with this limited set of powers. So that's item number two. Item number three is basically about how we ensuring that the ICANN community we are empowering represents adequately the overall global internet community. How do we make sure that the ASOs and ACs, when using their new powers, are actually in line with the expectations from the broader internet users? And that was carried through items of diversity. How do we ensure these bodies we're creating, the ASOs themselves, are sufficiently diverse? And it's important to stress that it's just like Fadi Shehadi was saying in the opening ceremony about excellence. This is about a journey. You're never diverse enough. There's no perfection, but it's about enhancement, enhancing accountability, enhancing diversity. And that's an issue that came back in many comments, and we'll be considering how to best address it. And on those three new issues, we will certainly welcome questions in the question and answer session that's coming now, and questions and suggestions, because we're only at the beginning of our reflections, and it's valuable for us to get your input on those issues. The fourth topic on this list is a main concern we have received in a number of comments regarding the reference model that Thomas was mentioning earlier. The reference model is this model we had designed to empower the community with this community mechanism with the 29 votes, etc. As Thomas said, we were considering a reference model that would turn ICANN into a membership organization, where the members would not be just anyone, but would be the CCNSO, ASO, the GAC, at-large, SSAC, RSAC, and GNSO. But it wouldn't be an open membership. It was the proposal. And the proposal said that these organizations would create unincorporated associations in order to become members. That raised a number of concerns. Concerns about complexity, unintended consequences of accountability of these unincorporated associations, and a number of concerns regarding the fact that these organizations might have to be specifically incorporated in certain jurisdictions, including the jurisdiction of California. So basically what our group did on Friday was review all these comments and listen. We listened very intently. And then we said, okay, let us try to give another shot at designing a model. So we had this excellent session of elevator pitches where about a dozen of our participants and members sort of introduced in 5 minutes their favorite model, their vision of a favorite model, and then we started narrowing down the list based on a number of criteria. And we are currently designing a fresh approach which we are currently labeling as the empowered SO and AC model, which provides compatible authority, so the same number of powers would still be possible, with a lower number of additional steps to take. So it is still very much under development, and I expect there will be some questions on that, and I'm sure Becky Burr here will be able to answer them. But the one thing I want to make clear is, because it's probably no longer the necessary to ask any question about this, is the unincorporated associations, they're out, no more. There are no more questions about incorporating into California a specific association in terms of registering, filling the forms to California attorneys. So there's still, this model has lived, and now we're moving on to another model which has a number of similarities, because if you look at this slide here, all of this is still here. We've had feedback from RSAC and SSAC that they wanted to stay as an advisory capacity, so that will change. The 29 number will change. But the powers are still here. They're still, and the community is still empowered with the power to reject a budget or a strategic plan, to reject bylaw changes, to approve fundamental bylaw changes, to remove individual board members, to recall the whole board as a last resort measure. And I think that I will pause there because probably our group will need to further flesh out this approach before it's fully ready to be discussed. But I think it was important to signal that the two-layer approach, where the ASO is a member and then it creates another association, is off the table. And I think that with that, we will finally come to the point of this meeting where we can have questions and answers. We've talked long enough now, and I'm turning to Leon, who will moderate this question and answer part. Leon?
Thank you very much, Matthew. Well, we would like to, of course, open the floor for questions and comments from the audience. There are microphones at the front of the room, and we would kindly ask you to keep your comments and questions short. There will be a two-minute timer for participation. We now encourage you to come to the front and ask questions and do comments. So I remind you to state your name, of course, and affiliation for the transcript purposes and the remote participants, and, of course, for interpretation. It makes their life easier to know who's speaking rather than just women or men. So please, our first on the queue.
Thank you. This is Anne Aikman-Scalise. I'm a member of the IPC. My questions are actually directed toward the stewardship proposal, so I don't know if Jonathan and Lisa are coming back, but maybe others can answer these two brief questions. The first question I had about the stewardship proposal is, after the transition and creation of the PTI entity, does the IANA managing director report to the ICANN board or to the PTI board?
Thanks. And CWG-related questions, we will defer to the session, that's the average session for CWG that's coming right after. So,
no stewardship questions now.
No, we would like to defer them to. That was a point that I was supposed to clarify. I'm sorry for that.
I've been told to ask the relevant question. Craig Ng from AP NIC. It's a question that is actually at the intersection of stewardship and accountability. PTI, there's a lot of thought that's gone into the structure and the creation of PTI. In the accountability side, has there been any thought given into the preservation of the PTI in terms of inserting something in the fundamental bylaws that prevents ICANN from, say, disposing of PTI or changing PTI or changing the constitution of PTI in some way?
Thank you very much. Anyone wants to react to that or provide a reply? Peggy?
I would expect, I have not been following the CWG closely, that we will get a package of necessary bylaws changes from the CWG, and I can't imagine that something like that wouldn't be in it.
And if I could add, they can designate that the establishment of PTI would be considered a fundamental bylaw, not just a regular bylaw. And as the co-chairs explained earlier, regular bylaws are subject to one of the community powers of blocking a change with the three-quarters majority. But a fundamental bylaw is a little different. If the board proposed a change to a fundamental bylaw, the community would be required to approve it with a three-quarters majority vote. And I think that's the protection you're asking for.
So just as a follow-up, because PTI is going to be a wholly owned subsidiary of ICANN, so ICANN can technically dispose of PTI, change the constitution of PTI, without reference to anyone else, unless it is prevented from doing so in its bylaws, whether it's fundamental or non-fundamental.
Matthew?
Yeah. Just the CWG has made clear to us that their requirements were meant to be, by default, fundamental bylaws. In addition, disposing of a subsidiary I would expect would be in a strategic plan plus in a budget. And that would imply that the community would be empowered to veto such a plan in case that happened. And if the board did that outside of the strategic plan or outside of the budget, then the community would be empowered to recall the board. I can expect this kind of situation as a very, very sensitive one. So there are a number of powers in our proposals that are actually providing safeguards to that extreme scenario.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Alan, please.
Thank you. The new empowered ACSO model is interesting, particularly in that it allows each ACNSO to decide whether to participate or not. We've already heard the SAC and the RSAC will not. It is questionable whether the GAC could, because of various issues related to how governments participate. We haven't heard from the ASO. There have been comments that the CCNSO may have problems with a membership organization. That says if the ALAC also chooses not to participate, and we also have some significant concerns in that area, we could end up with the GNSO being the only member of ICANN. And from the GNSO, that may be a marvelous thing. From the optics of ICANN being controlled only by the GNSO, and when the GNSO has, there is a very, very strong, not necessarily absolute control, but a very strong influence and the ability to veto anything by the contracted parties, that starts to bring ICANN into question as a multi-stakeholder operation.
Thank you very much, Alan. Becky, do you want to respond to that?
Yes. First of all, that is an important concern no matter what model we go with. Preventing capture and ensuring that the powers of the community are being exercised by the community and not by a minority of the community imposing their views on others. So I think that's critical under any model, and it's completely legitimate to ask that question under the empowered SOAC model. I want to just say to begin with, we've just started talking about the empowered SOAC model. It's not a done deal. People seem interested, but it's not a done deal. But the kinds of checks and balances about what kind of support you need in the community to proceed with any of exercise of those powers don't go away because one SORAC takes the steps necessary to become an official member. Those checks and balances are still in there. There are clearly details and refinements that need to be made, but I think that's the fundamental hard work that we have to do no matter where we go, and we clearly have to do it if we adopt the empowered SOAC model, whatever that turns out to be.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Becky, Steve, do you want to add to that?
If you don't mind, Alan, I wanted to follow up in one other respect, is that the decision to participate in a vote, Alan, the decision to participate in a vote is available to any AC and SO because it will be established in the bylaws, and exercising their voting on slide 19, I think Alice or Hillary will put it up, that decision can be made at any point. You can participate in a vote. If something of really great import came to the ALAC, you could participate in that vote, and that doesn't require any indication of membership. So we may have a slight confusion that these powers would be baked into the bylaws, and they're available to all AC and SOs to vote, and they can vote anytime they wish. So the decision of, for instance, the SSAC and the RSSAC to say that we'd prefer to stay advisory and not vote, that's not an irrevocable decision. We'll try to write the bylaws to be open to all, including those who, for the time being, decide they'd rather not vote on a budget proposal or a bylaws change. But that can be changed at any time. They can simply exercise their power to vote by taking a position. And none of that requires a decision to be a member.
Well, just to be clear, all of slide 19, none of that requires a decision
right.
That's one of the safeguards that gets built in no matter what. So the voting continues and the powers of the community continue, and that is not changed by one SO deciding to become a member.
Okay. I'll reiterate that my question was, to a large extent, the optics and how it will look if the only formal member of ICANN is the GNSO, where contracted parties effectively have a veto of any decision of the GNSO. It's very much an issue, not so much of what an 18SO could do in a crisis situation, should it choose, but how it looks to the rest of the world.
And that's a fair point.
I think we will continue, of course, to discuss these points throughout our sessions in this week. And I think you want to add something, Jordan?
Just on that point, Alan and everyone, we had a meeting on Friday where we sort of thought about an evolution and a change to the model based on the feedback. In the process that we're following, if you analogize it to where the CCWG was, the stewardship group, we're a couple of weeks after the close of the first public comment round. So I think, you know, it took them from January to June to get it right. We need to keep going. But the point I want to riff off your question to make is, if anyone is making decisions today about whether they want to participate or not, and I don't think that's what you're saying, I would just urge everyone to still keep an open mind, because what the final model is going to look like to propose back to you in September is really still a bit up in the air.
In the issue of full disclosure, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a member of the CCWG. I understand how tenuous the current proposal is, but I wanted to mention an issue which is of great concern to the at-large advisory committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Chuck, we have a remote participant question. Could you allow us to put that? Thank you. So, Alice, we have a remote hub in Tanzania that's going to join us. Thomas, would you want to answer our remote participant?
Yes. Thank you very much for your question. And actually, inclusiveness is one of the points that we put an awful lot of attention to from the very beginning. It is difficult for us to reach all those that should chime in our discussion, but it's not too late. So you can make yourself heard, participate as a participant or observer. Do send a public comment in the second public comment period. It will be thoroughly analyzed, so there's no door that is closed. We are fully cognizant that this exercise is an exercise where we need the buy-in of the whole community, and not only by different stakeholders, but also by participants from all over the world. We have done a few measures, and I'm very clear that there's a lot of room for improvement, but what we did, for example, is to make it easier for everyone to understand. We did something which I think hasn't happened often in ICANN's history. We have added to the written report graphics illustrating what we're doing to make it easier to understand. We have done videos in three languages where we explain the basic principles of what we're doing. Also, the report itself, the long report, has been translated into five UN languages. So I think we're doing what we can do with the toolkit at our fingertips and even beyond, but we would like to encourage all of you, and I keep repeating this in various fora, do reach out to your respective peer groups, make them aware of this important task, and encourage them to participate. The entry threshold is nil. Please do join and be part of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Next in the queue, we have Chuck Gomes. Chuck?
Chuck Gomes from the Registry Stakeholder Group and VeriSign. First of all, let me compliment the CCWG. You're doing a great job, and I know how much time you're spending, so thanks for that. And not just you guys, but the whole group. It's super work. And it's a great example, as others have said, of the multi-stakeholder model working. So my thanks for that. I just want to clarify something that Alan said with regard to the GNSO. I just want to point out that the contracted parties do not control the GNSO. It's much bigger than that. So, but I have a question. Matthew, it really comes back to something you said about the unincorporated associations, and that may be a moot point. I don't know now, but would the unincorporated associations, if they were involved, would they have to be unincorporated associations in California?
Do you want to?
Peggy, do you want to answer?
I'm looking at our lawyers who have given us very good advice. I think the answer to that question is no, and I'm sure they'll correct me if wrong. But here's what I think. The statute requires for membership legally cognizable personhood, which is established by the declaration of intent to participate as a group to exercise those powers. In California, that might be an unincorporated association, that might be something else. It might be something entirely different in Switzerland. There's no requirement that you actually file papers anywhere, and there's absolutely no requirement that if you want to file papers, you have to file them in California. You have to have legally cognizable personhood, and that we've wrapped ourselves a little bit around a pole with this term unincorporated association. That's really not what's going on here. The legal personhood is the issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Reggie. Thank you very much, Chuck. Rula?
Thank you, Leon. Ruth Mayer. Maybe I should declare I'm also a member of the CCWG, so I should probably not take too much time from other people of the community. But I'm just a bit worried maybe that, Becky, you didn't make one particular aspect of the new model that we're looking at clear. And I want to illustrate it with an example. Steve mentioned that one of the powers that the community will get is voting on changes to the bylaws with a 70% threshold. Even if, for instance, the CCNSO would not file such a declaration of intent, they would be voting. So they would have the power. It is only that they could not take ICANN to court if they had not declared that intent, because they would not have this legal personhood. That would be reserved to those entities that had declared that intention.
It might not look good, and if it's only the GNSO that files that intention, we might wonder if it's a good idea to go into this whole membership stuff for that, and maybe the other model that we've been discussing with designated is a better one then. But I think it's very important that this is a distinction. None of the SOs or the SAs would have to file this intent to get the power. The power will be there.
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
Good question. Thank you very much. Shin?
Thank you very much. My name is Shion Jidiji. I'm from Africa. And I'd like to also indicate that participation in Africa is increasing, and we hope that it will continue to increase. My comment is in relation to perhaps a question to the CCWG. I'm concerned, I'd like to know exactly what powers would we be losing if we don't go the membership route, because it still looks like this enhanced model still ultimately turns to a membership solution. So what will we be losing if we don't go the membership route in your report? Because I know currently, without being a member, we can actually appoint SOs and ACs can actually appoint directors at the moment. Without being a member organization, board of directors are actually required to obey the bylaws. So what powers, apart from, for instance, removing board members, is it that we'll be losing if we don't go the membership route? Thank you.
Could I just ask a clarifying question here? Because I want to make sure that when you say when we don't go to a membership model,
yeah.
Are you talking about if we live in a purely voluntary cooperative model, or are you talking about the enhanced?
Yeah, so maybe I'll answer the question to you. What is the model we have right now?
Okay, right now we don't have a model that has been agreed to by the committee.
Right now
we have an entirely voluntary cooperative model.
Yeah. So what will we be losing? Because I know WG has recommended a lot of improvement on the bylaw and so on and so forth, which actually ICANNBOARD is required to obey. So what I'm saying is that what will we be losing if we actually don't go.
Okay, so we could write all of the bylaw powers that the community has identified into the bylaws right now as a voluntary cooperative model. So long as the ICANN board thought it was consistent with their obligations under law, they could honor those, and we would be fine. The only, as I understand it, power that we lose, and I don't mean to minimize it because I personally think this is a pretty important power, is that we would not have the ultimate enforcement power. Ultimately, it would continue to be the board's final call, and authority wouldn't be shared in an enforceable way. I'm trying to get away from the word enforceable because I think it's more about authority, but if you are comfortable with a voluntary cooperative model, we can put all of those things into the bylaws as they are.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. At this point, we'd like to close the queue with the lady that's, of course, at the end of the queue. And we would like to, of course, also open a question for the remote hub that we have in Colombia. Colombia is also a remote hub, and we would like to welcome them, and they will be next. Muchas gracias a Colombia. Responderé en español. la participación y la inclusión está garantizada a través de las diferentes organizaciones de soporte y los comités consultivos, los CCOs y las ACs, y lo que les pedimos y los les rogamos encarecidamente es que participen a través de estos medios, que en el caso de ustedes, que son una ALS dentro de la comunidad at large, que se acerquen por supuesto a las diferentes llamadas que tenemos mensualmente, a los diferentes medios que tenemos para participar, que participen en los periodos de comentarios abiertos al público, y pues que nos hagan saber cuáles son sus inquietudes y sus preocupaciones. De esa manera garantizamos que las decisiones se tomen no solo dentro del grupo, sino además dentro de nuestra comunidad como ICANN, sean estén legitimadas y que puedan tomar en cuenta a los diferentes o a las múltiples partes interesadas dentro de esta actividad. Gracias. So we will go back to English and we'll switch to our next person in the queue, please.
Thank you. My name is Andrew Sullivan, and just to be clear, I'm speaking for nobody here except for me. I wonder if there might be a tension, so I wonder if you might reflect on whether there's a tension between the voting approach that is outlined in the proposal and multi-stakeholder traditions broadly construed. In particular, if you look at the proposal, there's a fairly strong bias towards names interests as compared to everything else. Now, maybe that is legitimate for the ICANN community, but it does entail that you're going to have a bias in that direction. And, of course, when you've got majority voting mechanisms, then as long as you can assemble a majority, you can sort of permanently exclude people who are not, you know, part of that coalition. Traditionally, in any kind of multi-stakeholder approach, the idea is that you've got all these different kinds of views and they all have to be, you know, sort of more or less evenly balanced. And I just wonder whether there's any kind of tension there and whether that, was something you discussed or looked at. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your question. Thomas, would you like to answer that?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. And it's not the first time we hear this question, and we've discussed it extensively in our group as well. There is no intention whatsoever to move away from a consensus-based decision-making. So what you see here, the voting scheme, is only for last resort community powers, if and when they need to be exercised. So let's take the example of the budget. Before a budget is approved by the ICANN board, which could then be challenged by the community with one of these powers, there's a consultation process. So none of these powers should be executed as a surprise. So there will be consultation with the board and the community on these matters, and only in case a future board, a rogue board, let's say, wishes to ignore the express wishes of the community, then the community could come together and take a vote to overturn, let's say, board decision or force the board to reconsider decisions that it has made neglecting the community's wishes. Also, let's be very clear that the community empowerment that we're discussing is not related to ICANN's policymaking. So the policymaking in the GNSO or the CCNSO or elsewhere will remain as it is. That remains untouched, and that will be continued to be conducted in the way that CCNSO or GNSO, for that matter, would do their policy making, and that would be primarily consensus-based.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I think, Steve, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, to further emphasize the notion, if the community power of the independent review, the enhanced independent review, were used, all it can do is ask these independent experts to look at our bylaws as the standard of review and decide whether or not the decision should be upheld or reversed. It cannot change the nature of the policy. It can simply say that the board either did or did not act appropriately. And in that respect, it goes back to the community so that the bottom-up consensus process can devise a decision that fits more in keeping with the bylaws. And there's no ability to override the bottom-up process by micromanaging or changing what's in it.
Thank you very much, Steve. Next on QWeb. Oh, wait.
Yeah, Gowei is in my personal capacity, not represent the board view at all. And actually, I'd like to follow in Andrew's question. Although you're talking about you're going to the consensus stuff, but if you look at the current design, the 29 votes, If you including the number community and the technical group, is about 9 vote. If you take a in a case, you are going to be voting. Even you take the 2/3, this 9 vote from the number community, including the technical community, the total vote 9 is insignificant. So you can ignore this organization, you can ignore the technical group, you can ignore the number community, you still can pass the 2/3. This is the first question I'd like to, you know, even you say you are going to consensus, in some sense, in the critical, you are going to vote, there will be, their vote is insignificant. That means you can ignore them. There's one question, the first question. The second question I really like to ask for this design. In this design, you are talking about, you know, you start 29 votes, the basic community can override the board decision, whatever, the finance or whatever, like that. My question is, if you override the decision of the board decision and something, the lawsuit happen, the liability, who will take the liability? Is a board or your 29 voting member? That liability problems.
Thank you very much for this, Kuwait. I think, Jordan, do you want to answer the first part of the question?
Let's hear from you this time.
Yeah. On the first question, Kuwait, I don't think it's to assume that the technical community and the rest of the ICANN community would be at total odds on something that was an accountability decision seems unlikely. And given the thresholds that we've built into this first draft of the model, it's almost impossible to exercise some of the core problems. So, for example, if there was a fight about resources in the budget, as we've proposed,
well, let me give you one.
Can I just finish my point? If there was a fight about the budget and the community sent the budget back to the board, to do so a second time would require some of those technical community people to be involved.
As I was appointed by the ASO, mm-hmm. ASO always get a list of the financial support. We always put into the room far away of the many. You know, and so sooner or later, one of the critical situation happen, you need to go into vote. That situation will be happen. So I just like to remind, even if only 1% of possibility going to happen, is there any way we can resolve that?
Maybe following up, the first thing is, I think this is an interesting stress test. We need to make sure whether our system, how it would react if at a point in the future there was a rift between the technical community and the non-technical community, although I think the border between them would have to be defined. I don't know whether as a CCTLD manager I'm in the technical community. Maybe you don't consider me as a technical community. I would argue that some of us at least are very strongly technically rooted. So that's the first question, but that's a valid stress test for us to check. And I mean the 29 are going to change because it's going to become 25, and then we're going to fine-tune this, and that's exactly what we're trying to do when we're trying to fine-tune it, is stress test any risk of capture. So that's very important. You asked a second question about liability. We have the independent legal counsel here, so I'm very careful. But my understanding is, the fiduciary duty and the liability rest with the board and only the board. But you will agree with me that the responsibility of the board is to get community buy-in. Can you imagine a situation where the board would have to adopt a budget that would not be supported by 2/3 of the community? That's a very difficult one.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happens in any organization. I run a membership organization. I mean, sometimes there are projects that my board wants to do, and the membership's not ready. It's their responsibility, and they get rejected. Never happened. but it could, they could get rejected. It's still their responsibility, and that's the sad story of board members.
Yeah, I get
you have to deal with the stakeholders or shareholders or whatever you call them.
Yeah, I know. I just raise you to understand.
Well, I'm seeing some nodding from the lawyers, so I must not be too wrong.
Thank you very much. I remind you to and would kindly ask the questions to remain short. We are running out of time, and we need to still get through many items in the rest of the session. So please, can you go ahead?
Yes, this is Jiahe, and I'm from China. I'm also a fellow of ICANN Fellowship. I just have two questions. First is, I'm thinking about CCWG proposal. Even if the IRP said ICANN board make wrong decision, how to deal with the decisions? I think we need more specific procedures in the ICANN bylaw because we can't find these specific processes in the proposals. Maybe. And another question is. Another is not a question, it's a concern. I'm thinking about if currently the ICANN board was selected by the communities, and also the ICANN, the communities, is possible to recall the whole board and also fire one of the board members. But if I just imagine that if we are the ICANN board, the smart decision we made is we just keep quiet to accept every policy. So why do we need ICANN board?
Yeah, why do we need ICANN board? Becky, do you want to answer that?
I'm going to answer the first question, not the second. In favor of my continuing ability to interact with the board. Your question about specific procedures to deal with independent review decisions that the community takes issue with is a very good one. There are not proposals in the report now. That is an issue that we are still working on. It's been flagged, but clearly that is an issue of great interest to the community, and it is one that we will be talking about.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you. This is Leon Sanchez again. Malcolm, do you want to make a question?
For the record, Malcolm Hutty from Lynx. This is not so much a question so much as a comment. I'd like to take this opportunity to draw something to the attention of the broader community. It relates to that last issue, the power that is proposed to recall the entire ICANN board. The proposal from the CCWG would require for that power to be exercised, that it was that a motion to of no confidence in the board was supported by multiple SOs and ACs. This ensures that it is not too easy to fire the ICANN board, and people don't want it to be easy to fire the ICANN board. Nonetheless, the consequence of this is that it is possible that an SO could, by a very broad consensus within itself, support a resolution to discharge the entire board, and that that resolution would not find support from other SOs and ACs. So it may be, for example, it's entirely foreseeable that an issue that concerned one SO greatly and for which they had found there was no other option left to them other than to seek to discharge the board simply did not relate to the matters of the other SOs. So, for example, if it were, I don't know, something to do with the board's repeated failure to honour the PDP process, for example, in the GNSO, simply doesn't concern CCTLDs or the numbers communities because the PDP doesn't relate to them, which would create the possibility of a situation where one of the primary communities for which the board was responsible had formally said that it had lost confidence in the board and the board remained in place. This is a choice by the CCWG to prefer the importance of stability and making sure it is not too easy to discharge the board over the importance of ensuring that the board commands the support of the communities which they serve. I find this surprising And I think that if it ever came to this, it would be highly controversial. And that is why I've chosen this town hall as an opportunity to draw the attention of the broader community to the implications of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. Milton?
No response to him. Okay. Milton Mueller, I guess Georgia Tech University. I have some responses to some of the other people that talked to you. I'm coming here from the GNSO, and I was a little bit disturbed to see Alan Greenberg say that the GNSO was basically the contracted parties. I'd just like to remind you that the GNSO is half contracted parties and half non-contracted party. There's an entire house that seems to have been overlooked there, and those non-contracted parties are user constituencies. But I wanted to address the broader point as to whether these SOs or ACs would accept the empowered membership model. I think that's an interesting element of your current plan, and I'm not sure I understand the full implications of it. So let me just ask you, first of all, I can understand when Alan said the RSAC and SSAC would not possibly accept this, and I actually don't think they should even be in consideration as a member because, A, they're appointed by the board, and, B, they are meant to be advisory committees, not essentially policy makers, as I understood it. So I think there should be a clear separation between advisory committees in their role as members and the actual supporting organizations that were supposed to represent the entire multi-stakeholder communities that develop policy within ICANN. So the other comment I have relates to what Kuo Wei said, which is he's picking out a couple of these constituencies and saying they're a minority. Well, taken individually, all of them are minorities, are they not? And so you do have a balance of power issue that you need to think about in a stress test fashion, and in some ways the last person mentioned this, but I don't think it's valid to criticize this model by saying that no single community has complete control of the membership structure. Okay, so those are my comments, and now I have a simple question for you. When people are arguing against this membership model, what are they proposing for enforceability? What is the alternative that they're giving us to create the accountability that we want to have? Now, sure, there are various details about this model that you can debate and discuss, but what really is the alternative that we are being offered if we don't have some kind of membership or some kind of mechanism for enforcing accountability? Because isn't the need for that what created this entire process to begin with?
Thank you very much, Milton. Steve, do you want to? Or Becky?
So I'm going to answer your question, Milton, on the sort of enforceable, non-enforceable, because the designator model also has the enforcement characteristics. There is a strong group of people in the CCWG that feel that it is okay and effective to continue to rely on the voluntary or cooperative model that we have now. The question is sort of we expect and anticipate that the board will do the right thing in these circumstances, and we're going to continue to expect and anticipate that. Both sides say that. The question is whether that's enough. And so the difference is, do you need an institutional, the ability in the absolute worst case scenario to enforce through an IRP, for example, or not? And that's the discussion that's taking place in the community right now.
And Milton, it's Steve. There's an innovation, and Becky, I have to give most of the credit for it. The innovation that we discussed on Friday is that you said, would ACs and SOs accept the model? There isn't any need to accept the membership concept initially. All one has to do is decide whether or not you wish to exercise the votes the bylaws would give to each AC and SO, and you can make that decision at any time. That would it be a voluntary vote in the sense that the advice or the vote to block a budget would be given to the board, and we would still live in today's world where that's merely advisory to the board. None of the ACs and SOs have to turn on the membership or activate membership if the board continues to honor the voting that comes out of the bylaws. So it may never turn into a membership organization, but this is our last chance to put that enforceability into the bylaws by creating the potential for membership if it should ever be needed to get the enforceability.
Matthew, do you want to add?
Well, I think it's been already argued quite forcefully. Some of the arguments we're hearing as well, and I think are important to state here, is that a voluntary model, and I'm making myself the advocate for a moment, is just representative of how the Internet was built, based on cooperative agreements, and non-contract-based, like the peering arrangements, which are still very largely non-contract-based, and so that this model may not be disclosed like this, as well as the fact that the threat of basically a process like board recall being put out in the public would be sufficient to hold the board to honor the bylaws. And that's the arguments that we're getting, I think, and that's the debate we're having in the group, and I think it's important that it's shared with the wider group here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Next on the queue, we have Mary Uduma.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Mary Uduma. I'm from Africa. And first, I want to put a disclaimer that probably the group would have explored the possibility of looking at other jurisdictions and not just California. I don't know whether that has been done and whether we have restrictions, because each time we come up, you bring a model, we try to analyze how it will pair up, how it will work. We come back to the fact that there's a jurisdictional restrictions. So I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, so that's why I'm putting out that disclaimer first. Now, I want to say that if we take this model, will now every member of the board become a voting member, unlike what is currently on? Would all members become voting members? If so, can we reverse the process of electing the board or selecting board members through this process, these 29 votes? So all communities, everybody is involved, not only the community where the individual relate to, but the community, the ICANN community, will be part of it. People come tell us what they can do for us on the board, and we reverse the process and get this vote in the 29 process first, before, if there's going to be a recall, or there's going to be a recall of all or some of the board members. The liability question you've already answered. Can we also look at shortening the tenure of each board member, instead of allowing board members to be there 9 years, 10 years, and it continues? So can we look at that and make it shorter, so that it will be possible for other people to participate, and those that are saying we don't trust the board will go to the board and will see what they can do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. Do you want to ask it to that, Matthew?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mary. I think you made very good points, and some of them were actually already discussed. Others we may want to reconsider, including the tenure of the board members. One of the points you raised was jurisdictions, and I think this gives me an opportunity to address this question, which has been part of our deliberations a lot. And it's what we've realized doing this work is that jurisdictions has different aspects. Where are the headquarters? What is the jurisdiction of the contracts and the dispute resolutions? And those different aspects, we took the approach that, number one, we were requirement-based, so we looked at the powers we needed, and we said, can we do that currently with ICANN being incorporated in California? Answer is yes, mostly, no problem. And then we said, and that's going to be important in the next phase, we will further investigate all aspects of jurisdiction issues in Workstream 2. But when I say all aspects, that means we will look for aspects where the current system within ICANN would prevent achieving some requirements for accountability. So we won't look at everything, but if we find in the course of our work that we are blocked to implement a requirement which has not been the case so far, then we would look at whether the jurisdiction is an issue. Either, and most probably, there are some concerns that were voiced in our group about the fact that most of the ICANN contracts would have dispute resolution clauses in California, for instance. And that's something that our group can investigate and further elaborate on. So that's an important aspect, and I know it's a topic that's closely looked at by many within ICANN, but also outside. Definitely an important aspect of our work, and one of the comments we've received several times is to make our thinking more clear on this issue, which was actually not the case in the first initial public comment we've sent. So that's work that we know we have in front of us. So I think that's an important aspect that you mentioned. And the rest of the ideas certainly are part of our deliberations, and we need to further elaborate on that in our future work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Matthew, one last comment on there seems to be a misquote by Milton Miller on Alan Greenberg, and Alan wanted to clarify this, but the queue was already closed, and we didn't let him clarify this, but the misquotation comes from having the contracted parties veto on a supermajority vote in DNSO, so they could actually effective block a decision by requiring a supermajority vote, which turns this into an effective veto. So clarification made, Alan. And I'd like now to turn to my co-chair, Matthew.
So we are now going to invite Jonathan and Lisa back. They're here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm giving you the two CWG stewardship co-chairs, Jonathan Robinson and Lisa Fuhrer, for the next part of our session, which will be regarding the dependencies between our two groups.
So magic Q.
Yeah.
Q.
Yeah, the Q.
Einstein.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you everyone. It's Jonathan Robinson speaking. I know it's been a long session, and we'll try and bring this to a wrap relatively quickly, but we felt it was critical as part of this overall session to come back together now and talk about the linkage between the groups in a little more detail. Just to remind you, there will be an engagement session where you'll be able to talk with myself and Lisa. And in fact some of our drafting team leads later today. So we'd very much welcome talking with you in more detail, and I know there were questions earlier that wanted to address elements of the CWG proposal, and we're very happy to engage with you during that session later today. As a refresher, just to get us back where we were, I've put up a slide here. Here we have a slide of the post-transition structure with the critical elements of it. ICANN, the ICANN board, the contract between ICANN and the subsidiary, the post-transition IANA subsidiary, its own board, and the oversight and accountability and escalation provided by a combination of the board, the CSC, and the review functions, and then all wrapped in the accountability mechanisms provided by this group that you've heard so much from over the last hour or so. So I think it's just absolutely essential to look at this as an integrated package. And before going on to doing a little more detail on those specific linkage and accountability points, I think it's probably worth talking about process, because process seems to have bothered quite a number of people during the course of this. And by process, I mean how these proposals are taken through the route towards final acceptance. In Fadi's opening speech this morning, he talked about the different phases, and he highlighted the process. If you look at the process between our two groups, we have a proposal, a final proposal, here before the chartering organizations for approval now. What are they approving? They're approving a proposal that's expressly conditional on the work of the accountability group. They're approving that that proposal is sent to the coordinating group, the ICG, for review and integration with the proposals from the other two communities. That integrated proposal will then be put out by the ICG for public comment and thereafter brought back to as an integrated proposal brought back to be finally reviewed at the Dublin meeting, at which point we will be seeing the final proposal from the accountability group. And in reviewing that accountability group, as I said in my opening remarks, it's at that point that we would expect the chartering organizations, in reviewing the accountability proposals, to seek confirmation from the stewardship group that their accountability requirements have been met. What are those accountability requirements? They really break down into five key areas, each of which is dealt with, as you've heard, by the accountability group at a sort of global level. But we have specific requirements in the stewardship proposal that these are dealt with. So clearly we care about the ICANN budget, but the component of the ICANN budget we care about in the stewardship group is to ensure that there is sufficient and adequate and ongoing funding for the IANA function. But that sufficient and adequate funding for the operation and future development of that PTI is a critical component of the ICANN budget, and that's why we care about the accountability of ICANN in respect to the budget. We talked earlier about the fact that the PTI is a controlled subsidiary within ICANN. The fact that it is controlled and bound into ICANN means we care about the accountability issues of ICANN relating to the ICANN board and the community rights that this group, the accountability group, is working on. Our proposal under item 3 has two types of review functions built into it, the regular review function and the possibility of a special review function. We care about that accountability mechanism being built into the fundamental bylaws. Under item 4, our proposal has the CSC, which I described, the Customer Standing Committee, described to you in some detail earlier, and we care about that being incorporated into the bylaws of ICANN. Finally, we care about the possibility of independent review and the fact that that should be applicable to the IANA functions. So you take this as a package of requirements that we depend on this group to produce, and we need to be satisfied that this group will produce to the satisfaction of the completion of the overall package, and that these mechanisms will be captured in a set of bylaws or fundamental bylaws. So that's the essence of the linkage in a nutshell, and why the proposal can both stand on its own two feet at the moment, but ultimately requires a third foot, if you like, to make it stand up in full completeness when the work of this group is done. So we feel comfortable and confident in putting the proposal to the SOs and ACs for approval with those conditions built into it, because it can stand with all other elements complete, subject to the development work on the accountability. So I think that's probably all I and we needed to say on that. The community will retain significant influence through the accountability work, and as that, as the work of this group that you've just heard goes through its further iterations and development, and I think you heard that very clearly from the co-chairs in their presentation from the past hour or so, there is further development and work to be done to finalize that prior to it coming back together and sitting alongside the work of the stewardship group, which will ultimately then be presented as a package of two proposals to the NTIA later in the year. So I think that's all I wanted to cover for the moment to make sure. Would any of my other colleagues like to add anything to that or comment in respect of the account, the linkage and interdependence?
Yeah, maybe just to clarify again that when we started our work, both of the groups got charters on the basis of which they worked. So we were tasked with accountability, but the CWG's work also contained parts of accountability. And as we progressed and as we closely liaised with Jonathan and Lisa in particular, we found out that there were sufficient areas where they could just piggyback on what we're doing. And now we're in the situation where they sort of rely on us delivering on certain aspects. And I think I would like to reiterate that neither in our group nor from commenters during the public comment period did we get any challenges for us to meet CWG expectations. And I think that's something that's encouraging as we move on. So it's very, 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 very unlikely that we will experience surprises with respect to the CWG requirements, but this is still work in progress.
Thank you very much. And I would like to open the floor now for comments and questions. So it's your turn again.
Yes, thank you. It's Annie Kaminskalis with the IPC. And the other question I had, I wanted to...
I'm sorry, could you please put the microphone closer?
Annie Kaminskalis with the IPC. And I'll defer the other question to the later session, as Jonathan referred to that session. But this session is this question is about linkage and coordination. And the question is about the contract itself. In other words, I view the ultimate contract between the PTI and ICANN as an accountability mechanism. And so I'm wondering whether there will be a contract that is delivered to NTIA that has been approved by the ICANN board that will ensure accountability between ICANN and the PTI with respect to those functions which should be carried over and taken out of, for example, you know, in Schedule F, there are all these deliverables, and there has to be a determination as to which of those, you know, come into the new contract. So that's the linkage question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone want to react to that?
Yeah, I think... If I understand, we, as you will know from the proposal, we started to work on some ideas around a term sheet for what that contract might look like. We felt that our job was to produce a post-transition structure that could accommodate and deal with the transition of oversight. I think it would have been very difficult for us to specify in full and final detail what the shape and scope of that contract would look like. It's my expectation that is something to be handled as part of the implementation, and I think the confidence that the community should have there is that that contract will need to be ultimately settled between the post-transition IANA and the parent, and I am almost certain, and forgive me for not being 100% certain, that we've certainly discussed, and I would expect that would be assisted by independent legal advice. And I think that's where the confidence the community should have, that the reality of trying to develop that contract, I suppose I'd make one other remark, and that contract, as the current draft term sheet is likely to at least take some guidance from the existing contract. The problem with the existing contract is it's not wholly appropriate for the future, and that it's a government contract, and many elements of that contract relate to it being derived as a government contract, but it certainly gives some good guidance as to how things might be done in the future, and therefore was the basis of the term sheet.
Thank you, Jonathan. I believe, Steve, do you want to add to that?
And on the slide in front of you, look at number 6 and number 5 to truly understand the linkage. If the CWG proposal suggests that the bylaws of ICANN establish and create PTI, and they're in the fundamental bylaws, the linkage is that it would require 3/4 vote of the ICANN community to change a fundamental bylaw. That's the first. So 6 would protect the presence of PTI. Now go to 5. If, in fact, the contract between PTI and ICANN were altered, the board would have to approve a contract alteration, and if it did so above and beyond the community's desires, an independent review panel can be invoked to question that decision and measure it against the standard that the bylaws require. So those are the linkages we're talking about.
Yep. Yes. Thank you. Kowei?
Yes,
and I'm sorry, and we're now closing the queue after Caboose, so please.
It's Kowei again. Jonathan, can you put in the number 3, the INA function review, the compulsion? Because if I remember in the very beginning you were making a presentation, you look at the INA function review team. You look at the list, it seems like the number community and IETF is not in there. How you can do the INA function review without number community and IETF? Because you know, the IETF provide the protocol and number community is provide a number address stuff. In here, it's missing.
Look, I think that's a very good question. We have a really delicate line to walk here between trying to... We have the advantage of having the proposals from the other two communities visible to us through a substantial portion of our work. But we also had to recognize that it was our job and our scope to deal with the requirements of the naming community. The job of the ICG is to bring these three together and to think about how those might be welded together. As I understand it, there are review functions, review capabilities in both of the other proposals, and it may be that it's satisfactory for those reviews to operate independently, or it may be that there's a coming together of the way in which these work. My sense is that currently the different groups are satisfied with operating as they are independently, but you know, we have to be very careful about how far the scope of our work and in dealing with both the charter we had and our requirement, therefore, to deal with the naming community needs and requirements.
Well, I think, as you know, in the IETF or the number community IR, all the meeting is open for everybody, not only from the IR memberships. Anyone can go to the IR to make the comment, making the policies, participations. So I think it's, if that is possible, I think you should think about, that is a possibility to put the number community and IETF in the list. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next one, please. Lisa, you want to?
Thank you. I just have a response for that, because the IANA functions review are supposed to be open and transparent for everyone. So it's not going to be in a closed environment. So there will be possibilities to follow the process. Thank you.
And engage with the process. Well,
yes.
Not just follow, to actually actively engage with the process.
Mm.
But it wasn't necessarily to us to specify additional participants outside of the naming community on there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Because in these competitions, you didn't include these two constituencies. And if you didn't include in this constituency, as I was a liaison in ICG, basically we respect the CWG proposal. So if you don't open a window here, you're expecting they modify your final proposal?
Next to you now.
My name is Douglas Onyango, and I'm from Uganda. I have a question and probably a suggestion as well, and it relates to the accountability mechanisms around. Please, can I have the slide back? I think it's 9. I believe it's 9. So my question is especially around the differences between the IFR and the CSC. So, but this is particularly because when I read through the remit of the CSC, I see that some of it is rather operational in nature. And it got me thinking if a whole committee and a fairly independent committee is necessary to actually carry out this work, as opposed to perhaps having the operational aspects of the, what is being carried out by CSC be something that is inside or administratively handled within within the PTI, and then any non-operational aspects perhaps could fall within the IFR. As you have rightfully pointed out, the IFR's mandate or remit is rather wide and it could encompass quite a few things. So it got me thinking, instead of two committees, wouldn't we cover the work of the CSC somewhere administratively within the PTI and then get some of the non-operational stuff in IFR? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Do you want to answer that?
I'll try and respond. I think, I mean, the CSC is by definition responsible for reviewing the operational aspects of the performance. So I'm not sure I fully understand the concern, because it is representatives of users of that service. So to the extent that that service is not being performed adequately or satisfactorily, you can expect that to be highlighted and remedied. And if and only if it is not, are there escalation mechanisms to deal with that? So, yeah, I'm not sure I get...
Perhaps I will try again. The CSC and the IFR, is there anything the CSC has in its mandate that cannot be fulfilled by the IFR, which now requires that we have a completely new committee just for the CSC mandate?
It's Lisa Fuhr for the record. Well, the CSC is, as Jonathan said, covering the operational stuff. And the IFR has a wide mandate, as you say, but the CSC is a customer standing committee that's there all the time, whereas the IANA functions review is gathered every 5 years, so it's established to do this specific review. So you can't actually merge those two. You would have the CSC that's the customer that's overlooking the operational stuff, and the IANA functions review is a wider review of IANA as a whole, and it has all the organizations included, and that's the multi-stakeholder body of this model. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That gives an answer. I think it also answers my second question on whether these both committees are standing or ad hoc. So thanks.
Thank you very much. We do want to note that in this slide, the NCSG is missing, but in the report it's, of course, considered, and we do apologize for the oversight, and this is going to be corrected. So next thing, we have Malcolm. Malcolm?
Thank you. Malcolm Hutty from Lynx for the record. I do have a question this time, a simple question. It was prompted by Jonathan's reference to the resolutions before the chartering committees at the moment. Does the panel believe that it might be useful to keep the CWG and the CCWG formally in existence until the completion of the implementation of the proposals, so that the community has a structure available to engage in dialogue with the board and the staff as they grapple with implementation of your respective proposals?
Thomas?
CCWG. The answer is yes for CCWG.
The answer is no.
I think it's a good idea, and it's something we should be aware of. So, I mean, we've just got to make sure it's consistent with whatever's been resolved already and what's in the charter. But, yes, it's evident that there requires some oversight of implementation, and so it's a sensible point to throw into the mix. Thanks, Malcolm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next one, Caboose.
Thank you. My name is Caboose Oroste. I'm not raising any question to you. Don't worry. The way that you explained that it seems that between now and Dublin, we have a lot of things to do. You said that few people getting together behind the scene and provide something, and that is something to be really discussed. Now, it seems that between now and Dublin, we have many calls and perhaps few more face-to-face meetings. And in that sense, we benefited from the services of the ICANN staff. As I mentioned yesterday, I want to make it today more publicly. They have been very, very efficient, preparing the call, Adobe connections, telephone conversations, difficulty that we have, presentation of the document, immediately after the meeting providing the note, providing the transcription, replying to the question, and so on and so forth. I would request that if distinguished treasurer coming and naming these people, that we formally appreciate their efforts, because I don't know all of their names, but she may be so kind and kindly announce the name of these staff that provided to us these services, that for us time zones is okay, but for them they have to cope with all time zones. So there's a lot of work, and they are very, very efficient, very effective, very humble, with all courtesy and with all collaboration, and we really appreciate their effort. But I would like that their name will be pronounced, and that we put it in this transcription for the record of the people, and after that I would request that there be a big round of applause for them. But let's first pronounce their name and introduce them. That is very efficient and very necessary. Thank you.
Caboose, I'll make a quick remark here. I think it's a wonderful suggestion. I think we've had tremendous support, and I think the critical point for me is the support we've had is you could very easily say, well, that's their job. But they've gone well beyond, over and above, beyond their respective jobs. My challenge is with mentioning names is I'm very worried I might forget someone.
Yeah,
so I would like...
No, let's hear the name. Thank you.
Thank you.
Turn up, please, kindly. Sorry, disturbing you.
I will be very quick. I'm sorry. First of all, it is... thank you very much. For the recognition of the staff, but also for the recognition of the volunteer community around this. There are a wide range of names across the entire organization. We have different touch points across the department. Let me just name a few. Grace, Alice, Adam, Sam, Hillary, Brenda, Kim, Marika, Bart, Bernie, the entire language services team, and then obviously everybody else from IT who's helping out with various parts.
Nancy.
Excuse me.
Nancy and the meetings
yes,
team?
And the entire meetings team, Xavier in finance, who I know has also provided input into various other parts. The IANA team, as you said, we have the legal team. So we have a wide range of teams across the organization who have really been stepping to the plate and working 200% to help provide responses to different things in the day-to-day.
Not to mention Teresa.
Thomas, would you like to do a couple of remarks?
Yes, it's now my privilege to be the only one between you and lunch. This has been a very informative discussion. We will keep working closely together and exchanging thoughts. I would like to encourage all of you to stay tuned. Watch out for the next public comment period. And I'm not sure whether we have extended our thanks to the technical team that is doing everything to make this work, that we can understand each other, and also to the translators. So I just want to make sure. Thanks to Becky Burr, Steve DeBianco, Jordan Carter, Leon Sanchez, Mathieu, Jonathan, and Lisa. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Don't forget the engagement session on the CWG later this afternoon. I'm sure many of you will be aware of it. We look forward to seeing you there. Thank you.